Hi, and welcome, everybody. Thank you so much for coming. Before we start, I want to say I'm grateful for having the opportunity to talk about inner experiences with people that I think already know a lot more than I probably do. So I want to be cognizant of the fact that this is a little bit of a trick, so thank you. Let's start with a mandala offering. But I challenge you this time to really, as you do the words, to really think, what if you were the center of a magnificent new world that was perfect, and everything in it and the people in it are perfect? What's that feel like? And so as we do the blah, blah words, which we're so used to, try and feel the in your heart. Imagine happiness without end, no suffering, just bliss and joy between people and the most precious, beautiful things. And then as we do that, ask your teacher, ask the people that you rely on to teach you, or that thing inside you that turns on knowledge to a knowing, so an intellectual knowing, knowledge to a knowing, ask that thing to please come, yeah, for the next few words. You want to? Pukhiya jishin metok tram Riraling shin yindegim padi Sangge shindu mite gwargi Drogun namda shin la che parsho Hidam guru ratna mandala kam ninyatayami Chidam soki jognam lam Janchu bardu dakni gavsuchi Dagi jinyengi pe tsanam ki Drolav and jir zangge drupar sho Chidam soki jognam lam Janchu bardu dakni gyabsuchi Dagi jinyengi pe sanam ki Drolav and jir sangge drupar sho Chudang soki choknam lam Janchu bardu dakni gyabsuchi Dagi jinyengi pe tsanam ki Drolab en jir sangge drupar sho. Thank you. So I have good news and I have bad news. The good news is, no, let's do the bad news. The bad news is that whatever I was asked to talk about, yesterday they asked me, could I do this teaching because Ningpo couldn't come. So I said, yeah, I guess I can. It's a good test, but we're amongst friends. That's not even the good news. That's just news. The good news is that everything I prepared last night to talk about today was covered in what's his name's question, Canadian, Jerome's question, which is great. So now we can go a little deeper, and it's my preference of teaching. We get this information. I'm not a scholar by any means. I've been exposed to these things like you have through some miracle of goodness because they make sense. So why does that make sense? And then hundreds of other people listen to the same thing and they go, oh, I think I want to keep drinking, or I think I want to go partying, or I think I'm going to find happiness in all these other things. But these sounds, these ideas, there's something in them in my heart, and I think in your hearts if you're here. And so we're amongst friends that already have been born into this life with a sense of knowing that there's something more and deeper, and you've found it in the resonance of these words and these ideas. And I hope that together we can unlock that in a practical way so we can use it and really transform our lives. So your mom and your sister and your brother and your uncle and your friend and your employer and your etc. can look at you and go, I want to be like you, Andreas. Yeah, you're a little crazy, but there's something amazing about you. Maybe you're a lot crazy. No. You know, but there's something about each of you already that has attracted people to your circle. And then we have the responsibility to nurture and develop that. So I want to talk about the practice of these ideas today. The topic I was supposed to talk about, and I will talk about, is protecting good karma against the destruction by anger through dedication. So the last part of that, the dedication part, is already covered, and there's nothing I can do that's beyond our holy teacher Geshe Michael. But we can talk about how to apply it, I think, together as human beings, as friends. Yeah, so I hope to do that. But then I thought, let's talk about protecting good karma. Hold on a second. I was born when I was very young. I do it at every single time I do it. And I really enjoy that funny joke. Yeah. Good. But I was born in Argentina. And I was born in a Catholic country. So I didn't have karma as an idea. What's good karma, you know? And I propose that most of us weren't born with that idea. So today I want to talk about protecting good karma. Before we go and go, yeah, that's right. No, I want to say, what does that mean for you specifically? Because we're all born into this world with certain bhakchaks, certain capacities to understand things. And that capacity for some is up here for karma and up here for compassion and up here wisdom and up here all the other practices, and so you stack your knowledge here and here, but our towers look all very different, and our sculptures of our life practicing these ideas look very different because we come in with very different platforms. So I want to challenge us, let's spend a little bit of time about karma. You know, I'm sure they covered it in Jerome's question, but protecting good karma, before you go dedicating it, do you really know karma? And how much do you know karma? And what's in your mind that's karma? And is that different to what's intended? Or is that different to what it's practiced? And is it valid, etc.? I want to talk about that a little bit. And then the next part of the thing is against destruction by anger. And I can talk about anger. In fact, I was going to open by saying some swear words to you, see if any of you got angry, and then go, only joking. And I thought, that's probably not appropriate. Yeah? But now you know what was in my mind, right? So you can imagine that, which was probably better than the reality. We can talk about anger. So why? And the question was beautiful. How does anger get destroyed? How does good karma get destroyed by anger? And I want to spend a little bit of time about that and maybe share some stories. And then lastly, through dedication. And there's something to talk about dedication in the practice of dedication from what we've heard so far. And about, okay, we got these ideas, but really in your life, tomorrow, next week, with your mum, with your sister, with your brother, with the people that you love and the people that aggravate you, how do we practice these things? And how do you feel that you're on a path? And how do you feel that you're progressing? And how do you feel that you're making a difference? And how do you feel that the breath that you take in this world is worth living, is worthwhile? So I want to talk about that too. So I hope that it's okay that I'm going to ask some questions and discussions, and we'll do a little meditation. I propose we'll do one little meditation to apply these things. Is that fair? Is that a good idea? Okay. Do I need to do another funny joke? No. Good. Yeah. Or a funny joke, right? I should need to do a funny joke. So the first question is, really, what do we think karma is? You know, there's four great schools of India that tell us what karma is, and we got the 4x4 of karma. We talked about some of those laws of karma here, and we learn them, and we go, yeah, that makes sense. Good. But what's in your mind about karma? What is karma in your heart? Yeah?
It's just a consequence of an action.
Consequence of an act. Okay, good.
Okay, this is a movie and book reference, so I don't know.
That's where, yeah. Wow, in your vault. Okay, nice. Because then the consequences of your action have to go somewhere, right? And the mind-only school have this idea of a kunchi, that separate consciousness that they were talking about. So they go in that vault. You know, I did something here and it's going in that vault. But this, I'm not carrying any vault. You know, like, I'm not carrying anything. Where is it? You know? Lovely. That's beautiful. That's such a beautiful thing, yeah? Because your mind, your consciousness, the thing that you consider to be you, the thing that you feel with, the thing that if you close your eyes, you call yourself, yeah? So when I say Utta, you know, that thing you think is you, the one we protect all the time, the one we try and grab things for, I want to get things for me, you know, that thing, somewhere in there, in that identity, is this energy, yeah? And we come in these energies that are rolling from millisecond to millisecond. And when we had the discussion about how does anger destroy karma, I kept thinking about the rolling forward of every single action and intention that is inside you, every flavor that's inside you. And of course it's getting damaged if you're bashing it with anger. Of course, any goodness there is getting damaged because at this very moment you're angry. There's nothing but now, right now. And so right now, everything, I'll give you an example when I was thinking about the anger thing. Right now, if I am angry, every memory I have looks disgusting. You know, people can try and say to me, remember that beautiful time? And I don't remember that beautiful time. I can remember the images of the beautiful time, but it's got a flavor that's disgusting. If I'm angry, you know? So it's worthwhile to talk about anger, but I challenge you, where is your karma? You know, where do you think is your karma? You know, and it's worth investigating. Is it outside of this body? Is it inside of this body? Is it when you're sleeping, where does it go, resting somewhere? You think it's everything? Nice, nice. Okay. So then that also would make sense with what Jigme said, that it's rolling from moment to moment and producing your everything. Yeah? And everything, for me, it was easy at the beginning. So I've been studying these things like a bad student, really, since 95. A bad student. I didn't get the concepts. I can't do the Tibetan. I make efforts to practice and then I revert back to being angry or being silly. So over time, you get to see that. So if you give this stuff enough time, regardless how dumb I am, reality reveals itself. You know, the truth reveals itself. And so by having the goodness of a teacher or teachings that come into your life and say, have you thought of this? Have you thought of life like this? Then you have that reference in your collection of knowledge by which you are checking your experience day to day. And I tell you as an old man that over time, you verify this. Yeah? I'm 75. I've been doing that in dog years. No. Yeah. So it's important to just review these concepts and then you have to personally go and connect with these concepts and say, well, what does it mean for me? Because I know the moment of mine before this one, the one that had a certain flavor, brought that flavor to my entire memory bank and my entire expectation and my entire understanding of the world. You know, and we have inside of us, and I think the mind-only school is useful to picture, because we think in pictures. So it's useful to think that there is this bag of this place, a bag called kunchi in your one of your consciousnesses, where in there are all your bakchaks, yeah? And they're stirring and bubbling. And the ones on the surface are the now. Yeah? But you stir that pot at the bottom, and if in the bottom you have mud, it covers in mud. But equally, you go and stir the part that's filled with gold, and the whole thing fills with gold. And you have had moments, I'm sure, if you're here, you've had moments in the now where the world looks perfect. Whether you look at a person's eyes and you think, you're magnificent. And where and we're the same. And it doesn't matter whether you know them or you don't know them. Whether you think of your parents and you're filled with gratitude. And in that instant, in that moment, when the thinking my name is good, the kunji got stirred and you get all those lovely things bubbling on the surface, the world can be like that. And the problem we have in samsara, in this world, is that things keep changing, keep circling, keep cycling. Things have a shelf life and they disappear. So there's inside the wheel, inside samsara, and then someone is talking to us from beyond samsara, saying there's more than what you beings over there are experiencing to this whole thing. There's way more. So I imagine, I don't know if you've seen the wheel of life, the Bhava Chakra, with death holding the wheel and all the realms, etc. And Buddha's outside, and he's saying, hey guys, come out here, it's nicer to play with. You don't keep cycling. Yeah, and it reminds me, it is like teaching, is trying to teach a being from another realm, trying to get your fish in a fishbowl to read something you've put up on the fishbowl. And you, maybe you've drawn a picture of a cat or something. You know, it's like, look, it's a cat. Or look, it's, you know, you're trying to communicate with that fish. And the fish is so consumed in that realm that it there is very little communication other than fear and attraction, food and run away. So I feel sometimes when we get Dharma, the depth of the Dharma we can't possibly get, like the note on the side of the fish tank. I feel like we're fish, and for me in particular, I forget things every 5 minutes and have to review and review and review. And I like fish, you know, the memories that have 3 minute memory or something. Oh, a rock. Oh, a rock. You know, 3 second memory. Yeah, I forgot. See, I forgot already. So. So it's what I'm saying is consider what you think karma is and understand that in the state we're in, and I'm not putting it down, I'm saying, oh, we're terrible. I'm saying in the state we're in a realm that perhaps we don't get the entirety of the note on the side of our fish tank. Yeah. But the note on the fish tank about karma says, what's the 4x4 of karma? The four laws of karma. Do you remember that? We just covered them. It's certain. Yeah. Similar, like produces like flavors, yeah? And I have no problem with the flavors and the gold molded, by the way, because a nugget of gold that's goodness could be molded into a statue of a Buddha, or a nugget of gold could be molded into a ring. It's still gold, yeah? And so it has different shapes, and you can really shape. It's not like if I say hello to you, I will get 1,000 hellos later. That's not like that, you know? That's a misunderstanding of the note on the fish tank, I think. Okay, so we had two. We had it certain, like produces like. Sorry? Excellent, yeah. So it grows exponentially and way bigger than, I mean, just think about the cells in your body, how many there are now, and it began with two cells. You think about vegetation and how it grows. Things are exponential. Like beyond our capacity to understand. And that's easy. I tend to be more negative than positive. That's easy for me to get stuck on my negative habits. But when you flip it onto the more beautiful things we get to experience in this world, that's a magnificent thing. That your every goodness could multiply. And then your entire view of the world and your reality, not your view of the world out there, your reality, the fish tank you'll then swim in, is no longer a fish tank. Someone burst the fish tank and you are in an ocean. Yeah? So it's the goodnesses are also growing exponentially. And so the other one was? Great. So if you did it, you're experiencing it. And if you didn't do it, you get nothing. And I like that one because it implies any righteousness that I feel about my life, I should have this. Obviously, that whole sentence is mistaken because I would have it if I should have it. If I planted the courses karmically, it should be here. And no amount of complaining, no amount of crying, no amount of whinging, it's not fair and it's unjust, and that doesn't create the karma. That doesn't turn the pool of the Dunchi and it doesn't bubble out the karmas. That's just yelling that reality is not what you want it to be. And that's perhaps a good segue to anger when we go back to that. We want reality to be different than what it is, and that causes us to be angry. That causes us to feel that we've got the raw end of the deal. So those laws of karma are important, and you got to think, well, what is a karma? Karma is an action, right? Of what? Of mind. And the things that mind pushes us to do, which is say something good or stupid, or act and do something good or stupid. And it's imbued and filled with the intention. So if you want to develop a meaningful human life that can transform that fish tank and transform yourself, you need to get expert at understanding where your intentions come from. And if you just look at it from a Western point of view, a psychological point of view, which makes sense to a whole bunch of people in the West and our friends and family and to us too, we sort of believe it more than mystical stuff from the East. You know, when a scientist says here, this has been tested in the lab, we believe it and we don't even know where that lab is, right? Like everything's been tested in that lab. And who's in the lab? I've never seen the lab. Anyway, but we believe it because it's where we're at. It's our fish tank. So getting really good at us understanding our mind and our intention and seeing the flavors of it, but not as a punishment. Growing up in Argentina, for me, everything was an excuse to feel I'm not worthy and I'm not good enough and God's going to punish me and God put me in this world to hurt me and I'm just garbage. You know, and I've got to confess, and confession is bad, and I did a bad thing. So I grew up with that up until the age of 10, and then something flipped when I moved to Australia, and people gave me some different ideas. You know, so for a long time, I completely rejected the whole spiritual path because it made me feel bad, right? You got that? It, that thing out there, separately, self-existent Catholicism, self-existent culture of Argentina made me feel bad, and I lived most of my early teens and early 20s rejecting that and looking for philosophies that would help me not do that. Yeah. So if you look at it from a philosophical point of view, the subconscious is like 99% of what is driving our behavior. And your ability to get in contact with that, the stuff that keeps hiding when you turn around and go, what did I intend when I said that to that person? There are many levels of intention. And you could say it at the nominal level, but then if you really check, you know, was I hoping to get something? Was I hoping that they'd behave towards me in a different way? And this is where Dharma really can help. And you look at the eight worldly, what are they called? The eight worldly thoughts that humans have about wanting fame and wanting this. And that's a really good place to start about checking your intentions. So then that's the laws of karma. How do they ripen? And when I learned this, this was amazing for me, and I figured out why I got my dad and why I got my mum, which are now angelic creatures in my mind, but they weren't for a long time. And why did I get South America, and why did I get Australia, and why did I get Geshe-la Michael? So they say, well, do you remember the four ways that karma ripens? The environment is one. Who said that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. The environment is one. That's very interesting, yeah? Because if the world's coming from you and your mind, your karmas are ripening moment to moment, yeah? And they're rolling over to your very reality, everything in that reality is flavored with the soup that is your karma. Yeah, and whatever is bubbling at the top of the soup is not just you, it's not just your immediate interaction, but it's the place you're in and the kind of things that are acceptable in that place and unacceptable in that place. It's okay to hurt people in certain places, it's not okay to hurt people in certain places. And the subtlety of that within cultures. So, you know, in South America we have a different culture than in North America and in Asia. And what's that? That's a beautiful explanation, is the way karma ripens in your environment. And it's similar to the things that were stirring up in your consciousness, in your mind, rolling into here. So of course I would get a dad that would show me all the things I need to fix about myself. Of course I would get a dad that would trigger all the things that I needed to get better at. Yeah, of course I got a jealous dad, I got an angry dad, I got an abusive dad, and I got a loving dad. And I got a dad who tried wisdom. My dad was a shaman. He would sit in the middle. He was a, I'm going to start calling him a suburban shaman. Yeah. Because he would sit in the middle of the kitchen. I remember waking up one morning and I couldn't see my bedroom because it was covered in smoke and I was coughing. And I shared a bedroom with my two sisters and my younger brother and they were gone. I called their name. No one there. Just me and smoke. So I go to the kitchen. And my dad's kneeling in the middle of the kitchen, making this bonfire, like it was huge, and it's covering the house in smoke. And I'm like, what are you doing, Dad? I'm sleepy. I'm like 7 or something. And he's like, get out, the evil spirits are coming, and la, la, la. I'm like, what the hell's happening? I walk outside, my mum's out there with my sisters and my brother, just waiting for Dad to finish his thing. So there was crazy things happening in my house that had something to do with other realms and other places. And he seeked wisdom. He looked for wisdom. So for me, I look back and I see in that same stuff that I used to reject, my dad's grumpy, my dad's angry, my dad's ignorant, my dad's this. And I see all those things, potentials in me. Potentials in me that I need to polish into a Buddha statue. Yeah? And it's beautiful because the darkness, the dark side, the abusive side, the negative side is like a signpost to say, don't go there. And the beautiful thing that never quite worked or sometimes worked or was a signpost to say, you could go there. Yeah? So why didn't I have that when I was younger? And I propose it's karma. Yeah, I propose it's karma. Because my now karma about those events are very different to the then karma about those events. The events were the events. But the flavor of those events, that's very different. And so the flavor of the fish tank, when you're outside the fish tank, is very different to the inside the fish tank. You're much faster outside the fish tank. So I won't go on. You get what I'm trying to say. Study karma. There's so much depth. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, sure. So the four ways karma ripens. Like produces like. Right? So if it was, let's summarize it. If it was a darkness, if it was a negative intention, it will ripen as a negative effect. Yeah. It's the same as the four ways karma ripen. Yeah. As the four laws of karma and the four ways karma ripen have like equals like, both of them have that.
Oh, I thought you said it was the environment.
That's the third part, the environment. Yeah. So let me start again.
Okay.
So the four laws of karma are like produces like. Yeah, so this is a law of karma. It grows exponentially. It's certain, meaning if you did it, it will happen. If you planted an action in your mind, if you had intention to do something, you must get a result. You can't get away from the result. Geshe Las just said it before. And lastly, if you didn't do it, you didn't get the result. Meaning, if you don't have something in your life, you didn't put the causes in place, you didn't put the mechanisms in place to produce that reality. So that's just the way the four laws of karma, but the way those come into being, the way that they manifest themselves are that a watermelon seed will probably produce a watermelon. Because, yeah, it must produce. Yeah, I was trying to be engaging. But it's good. It worked. So like produces like. And if you do it as a mental thing, if you're looking at the mental karmas, which are the ones we mostly have to work on, then your dark intentions must manifest as annoying dark things around you. People and things and events, and your positive, beautiful intentions must ripen into something similar. And then you can get really fine tuning into the way you do that, and that's what Geshe Las was talking about, Sampa. And then the second one is a habit. You develop a taste and a habit for that thing. That's a way that karma ripens. Yeah? Sure, it's certain, but how is it certain? How will it come about? It will come about not only as an experience of something similar, but you'll get a habit for it. You'll begin to get a taste for it. And then you begin to get, in Western terms, unconscious that you're stuck in this habit, if it's a dark habit. And I propose, if each of us look deeply about our intentions and where we're at, you will find some dark things and some lovely things inside each of you, some magnificent things. And what I constantly hear Geshe-la talking about right now, lately, is this thing about we don't think we're good enough somehow. And I'd love to fix that. You know, I'd love to fix that, not just for myself, but for the people I adore on the planet and the people I spend time with. And what a world it would be if that would be okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is habit synonymous with practice in this sense?
No, it's more like you get a taste for it. So I remember as a child, for no reason at all, grabbing a lizard and putting that lizard on a skewer alive and putting a fire under it to see what would happen. Every time I tell that story, I purify that story. So that's why I'm telling it graphically. I remember the impulse. And it wasn't like, oh, if I do this, this will happen. It was like something vomited out of me and I had to do that thing. It was like compulsion. And then I saw some kids that did that with me get obsessed by it. And they wanted to do it more and more and more and more. That's what I'm talking about. The habit. Yeah?
I think of it like an addiction almost. So it's like you know it's bad, you don't want to do it again, but the desire to do it again is
exactly. And the more you're in tune, that's why I'm saying the more you're in tune with your, I'm calling it subconscious, but it's the more subtle part of you, the more subtle part of your mind, then you can catch those things before they come up. And hopefully we'll talk about them when we talk about anger. How much time do I have? Does anybody know? Huh? Yeah, so we got 10 more minutes. Here we go. Woo! Okay, good. We'll do that. So it was like the way they ripen was like equals like, then you get a habit for that thing. And then the environment was another one, right? And what was the last one? Do you remember? Great. Excellent. So even though you get to taste those karmas now and enact them, because you've done them, there's stuff left over. And if we're in the cycle of fish tanks, the next fish tank, you're going to get that flavor again. Now, whether that will be your major thing or your minor thing, not sure. Uncertain. Yeah? Uncertain. It depends at the time of death. That's another story. Then you should learn about the four ways to speed up karma marga, which they covered, and it's on that t-shirt. And you should learn the four ways to purify karma. And they're just the basics. And then living them, practicing them, writing them down is a whole study for 3 months or something of your life that if you do it, you might get a habit for it. It might become a subconscious thing. So, you know, when you're trying a new habit and you're consciously doing it, that's very different to something that's already a habit for you. And it's like driving a car. So when I was younger, my dad didn't know how to drive a car. I was certain of that because he paid somebody money to buy a license. But I thought I could drive a car and I was all of nothing, you know. So I sat behind the wheel of the car and I stalled it because it was a manual in no time. And I didn't know until that point that I didn't know how to drive a car, right? So there was a knowing, and that's what we talk about having some kind of tragedy in your life, some kind of impact, something that wakes you up and says you've got to do things differently. So using a very simple metaphor of that, learning to drive a car, at that moment where things hurt, reality didn't fit my expectations, I could keep blaming my dad or keep blaming the car, which is our natural tendency, the car is wrong, the car is bad, the gears don't work, I'm okay, this thing's not okay, you know? Or you could wake up and say, maybe I've got to learn something. And I'm proposing that's the same with this knowledge that we've found on the side of our fish tank. saying, okay, there's a bunch of knowledge. There's many notes on the side of our fish tank. Learn this stuff. Learn the laws of karma. And then when you learn them, like learning to drive a car, the first few weeks or months, you have to be very conscious of what you're doing. You're consciously moving the thing and you're looking at the road and you're all paranoid and don't talk to me, Dad. I'm okay. You know, your brain is completely consumed in this practice, this new practice, this laws of karma, if you like. You do that enough times, you get to get some certainty and some knowing to where you get to a point where you could drive the car from A to B and not remember whether you've gone through red lights because it's so part of your DNA now. You're not thinking about it anymore. And I propose it's the same with karma. Karma is one of those things. Karma, understanding karma is one of those things that you need to get from shocking against your reality, consciously making efforts, making it part of your habit. And then your everything you operate under is with that assumption, you see, without having to think about it. So the effort to learn it is a short time. And that can help you, that same practice can help you with the second part of our topic, which is anger, which is the thing that can destroy any lots of the goodness we have stored. So we talked a lot about, with Geshe-la in the last few days, we talked about destroying good karma through being angry at a bodhisattva, right? So I want to pull it back a little bit and just talk about anger. I want to talk about, see, because in the higher practices, you want to put yourself in a place where you're hookable, where someone gets you close enough to anger that you're like, oh, wow, that's where I'm hookable. That's where I'm vulnerable. And then you work on that, and that person becomes your greatest teacher. But we can't jump from getting angry to that in no time at all. So the first thing you got to know is where you're naturally angry and how you're naturally angry and what makes you angry. And like I said before, we've come into this world with very different stacks of karma. You know, and some people are easily angered. Some people are not so easily angered. And then out of those that are easily angered, what are some angered about? Injustice, about this or the other. What angers you? You have to know that. Go meet that monster. Draw that monster. Name that monster. Caricature that monster. Make fun of that monster. Watch that monster change, and it will appear over here in a slightly different form. But you've beat him over here, and then you start again over here. And I'm talking really practical things, so I'll tell you another story if I may. Yeah? The first time... I met Geshe Michael Roach in 1995. I didn't want to meet him. I was angry when I saw him. I didn't like him. I thought, who do you think you are, standing in a red dress, everyone bowing to you? Like, what makes you so special, so egotistical, such a show-off? You know? These things came into my mind the first moment I saw that creature on the planet. Who was speaking, by the way? Now understanding where the world comes from, right? What a karma. What a karma, right? Someone, a beautiful lady called Aura and Elizabeth, introduced me to their teacher, and I'm like, I was interested in the girls and I wasn't so interested in the teacher. And this impulse was yuck. And he was so loving and so kind, and got out of the taxi and he held my hand. He goes, hi. And I held his hand and I was like, hi, because I like the girls. And and then it was hard. It was really hard. Because then I had to sit there. And then they were giving free meditation classes at the Three Jewels. So it was free. I went. I was also cheap. Yeah, I was angry and cheap. Yeah, angry, egotistical and cheap. I still have those flavors, okay? And then I met Jigmet crying on the stoop, but I won't mention that story. But I didn't need Geshe La, you see. I had it all together. My shitty, angry life was fine. Thank you very much. It was like anger. That monster knew, the ignorance knew that that thing was going to challenge it. It was very aware. Like it was an impulse so hard. Yeah. I had no reason to dislike this monk. Nothing, you know. It was like ignorance knew it had had an opponent for the first time. So I didn't need him. So I went hang around and I did all the things, but I tried to avoid him, I ignored him, until I needed him. Yeah. And then when I needed him was when I'd started work at a company in New York, and that didn't work out so well, and they lied to me about visas and green cards, and all of a sudden I'm in trouble and I have a yelling boss, and every evening he's coming into the office. I'm running his business, and every evening, and I'm not exaggerating, this guy would come into the office. He'd make me wait till 7-8 o'clock where he'd finish his other business, and he'd come to look at my books, how many sales did I do and how many things, and I'd show him, and we'd made some money and it was good, and he'd go, "Hector, you're stupid! Why did you charge them $10,000? You should have charged them $20,000. Tell them it's $30,000. And then he'd do this for me, right? And I'm like, what? One job we had for $50,000, he thought I should have lied to the client, to the person we were giving the job to, and told them it was only a couple of grand, and we could have made all this money. And his philosophy was, you screw them before they screw you, Hector. And that was so shocking to me. But every day he would not just say those things, he would yell at my face. Yeah? His name was Gary. So, welcome, Gary. Gary was the thing that triggered my anger. The thing that triggered my anger most. I couldn't stop being angry. I was angry at Gary while I was working. I was angry at Gary when he came. As soon as he yelled at me, what do you think I did? I completely yelled back, "You're stupid, you're an idiot, you shouldn't cheat people. Like, I'm right, you're wrong," you know, all these things. And it wouldn't work. Months of that didn't work. And it was around the time when Geshe-la was teaching ACI in New York, and he was using his favorite, the angry boss story, remember, friend? And I'm sure you've all heard the angry boss story, right? And he'd say, when explaining the idea of emptiness, that there is an oval and there's a red oval, and how do we project yelling boss onto that? The only way he would say this on stage, and I'm sitting there with my girlfriends and trying to be friends with them, but I'm listening to this monk and he's saying the angry boss, and you can stop the angry boss, and you can stop the angry boss. And like the guy in the fish tank, I wasn't listening to, he was teaching all this stuff back then. I wasn't listening to this stuff, but what got through the glass was, you can get rid of the angry boss. So then that hooked me. And I went to him as humbly as an idiot can go to him. And I asked him for help. And he helped me. Sorry. And I asked him for a little help. I asked him, "Help me get rid of the boss." He sat down for coffee with me, and he didn't just give me help for the angry boss. He gave me a practice which transformed my whole idea of the fish tank. He gave me a practice which changed the world for me. Thank you. This is good, because then you think the stories are really good if I cry. So here's a person that I completely disliked. And then I had to go and pretend I was okay with him. And he gave me this practice. And he said, "You don't have to believe it. You don't have to do Buddhism. Just do this. Whenever he yells, don't yell back. And until you get to a point where you actually like him, just do that and everything will be fine." He didn't teach me details. And then he predicted, he goes, in the first month this will happen. You will yell back and you'll be angry at yourself at home. Be okay with that. The second month, you'll probably start yelling at him and he'll think you're schizophrenic because you'll stop yelling halfway through. And then the third part of the program, you won't yell at him, but you'll feel something in there. You work with that until you don't need to do that anymore. And I'm sure all of us have something that triggers that thing. And I was desperate. I did exactly what he told me. And sure enough, the first month I would go home and I'm like, I yelled at him and I'm an idiot. But the time got shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter until I did sound like a schizophrenic. I would go, but you're a... and he'd bait me. He'd go, come on, Hector, what are you saying? What is it you're saying? And I'm like, oh. It was hard. It was really hard. And then one more story. I know we're running late. A little end of this story, because this is about anger, and I was going to tell you all this other stuff, but the story surely tells it all. The time where I was feeling the tummy. Yeah, I wasn't yelling anymore, you know. And I understood that Geshe-la wasn't just a monk. Yeah? Yeah, I'm about to get there. Get this, yeah? No, the answer is no. I never liked him through that whole period, and I didn't like him after, okay? But but I loved him at some point. Here's the story. The day came where I could feel the impulses, and I knew he would come. And this day he stayed particularly late at his other job, so he made me wait even longer, and I patiently waited. I was practicing patience with him. He came, and he was really on. He was yelling strongly. And, you know, I'd stopped yelling, and he thought he would yell stronger. He would get a reaction, and it was hard, but I didn't do it. And at some point, he was so loud and so in my face. I'm sitting on the desk. He's standing up opposite my desk. And all I see, I swear to you, sound stopped. There was no sound at all. And then I see, like slow motion, these moving things, these arms that I knew were arms, but they weren't arms when I was looking at them. And his face was just doing this slow motion. And I swear, I had a moment where I didn't recognize what that thing was. And I didn't know what that is. I just knew from the movement, the agitated movement and the color, that it was hurting, that it was suffering. And I did what I did right here. I started crying. I looked at him and I loved him. I'm like, I wish you weren't suffering like that. And I had my first touch at that kind of love, which is different to all the other loves, you know. I had my first touch at that. And of course I did that. And he thought he'd won the argument because he'd made me cry, you know. It worked out to my favor. He shut up. But the thing is that he shut up for good. After that day, he never once yelled at me. After that day, another client offered me a job that was legal. I was illegal because of him, and there was all these stories. And he exited my life like that. And Geshe-la entered my life in a way that that is hard to explain. Yeah, in a way that every thought became imbued with the words and the notes I would get through the fish tank. You know, and some sides of our fish tank are thick glass. You can't really make out what he's saying, you know. End of the story about anger. I never felt angry towards him again. And then I used that practice of really, it's just simple karma. Just don't do to others what you don't want done to you. It's not like brain surgery. But the doing it is so difficult. But you just got to do it once. And that's what Geshe-la said to me. Just do it once, and then you prove it to yourself. I don't have to prove anything to you. And he was so right. So that was 1996, 97. It's 2013. Thanks to Holy Geshe-la, my life is transformed. Yeah, I'm now living legally in the United States. I do amazing work with John Foley and a whole bunch of other people. I run a non-profit in Nepal. And I get a phone call from this little kid who's finishing college. He's 17, about to turn 18. He says, I saw your nonprofit online. I'd love to help. I don't know what to do before I go to college. And I'm like, how'd you get my number? He goes, oh, my mum knows you. I'm like, oh, who's your mum? Gary's wife. So today, no, when I go back to New York in 2 weeks' time, this kid, Ilan, is flying to Nepal to serve all the kids in Kathmandu with his dad's blessing. We went and had dinner with his dad last week, and he said, Hector thinks it's good. You should come over more often. One more thing. The reason that worked is because of emptiness. It's because understanding emptiness. And we talked about karma on the fish tank. But understanding emptiness on the fish tank, the glass gets a little thicker. I can't remember how many times Geshe-la did the pen thing or whatever he was doing back then. I couldn't get the words. All I could get was him saying, it's so simple you miss it. I'm like, shit, I missed it. Whoops. You know, like... that's what I'd feel like an idiot every time. I missed it. He just said, I missed it. And then you hear it, and you get deeper and deeper and deeper. And I still feel like a flawed person, but I also have the seeds inside me and the bubbling up in that pool of karma, which has seen some transcendent loveliness in the people and the things around me, and the world around me, and the emotions around me. And every single inch of that fabric that I live in right now was weaved by a teacher. So, a teacher that understands and teaches emptiness. That's it. Sorry. We didn't cover the full topic. Dedicate. Yeah, let's do it. Let's do a mandala and then really dedicate if these things could turn your world inside out and you could get out of that fish tank. Johnny, you want to go? Yeah. Pukir jishin metok tram Riraling shin yande impadi Sangye shindu mite gwargi Drokun namda shinla chupar sho Hidam guru ratna mandala kam nyatayani Dige okun Tsunam yeshe soksok shin Tsunam yeshe lejun hui Dampa kuni topar sho. And just lastly, if you can dedicate any insight, any connection, any freedom, any goodness you got out of connecting together today and throw it in that those rivers of karma by our bodhisattva friends that go into the ocean of karma outside samsara, that's there from our Buddha friends. That's how your karma can be endless. Thank you.